Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of NatureNow at kptz.org.
Hello and welcome to Nature Now. This is Mary Robson, and I will be on today with Laura Ann Moulton, enjoying talking about spiders. This week brings the official Thanksgiving, the fourth Thursday of November. November is sometimes called Gratitude Month, giving words to how many of us feel this year when pandemic has disrupted plans and even planning. I am here with Nora Petrich, who's going to help us engineer ourselves, and with Laurel Ann Moulton, and we will be interviewing Laurel just in a moment. Here is an observation that is a sort of a holiday story. Some of you may have read this in one or another newspaper, but it really struck me. While the iconic Rockefeller Center Christmas tree was being installed, workers discovered an unexpected traveler hiding during the tree's two-day trip to New York City. The staff found a saw-whet owl, the smallest owl in the Northeast, hiding in the tree, apparently uninjured. The owl, who needed water and food, was moved to a wildlife center where he will be cared for until he is ready to be released into the wild. And I think they gave him mice, which just sounds exactly right. But what I thought I'd say here is saw-whet owls also live in Western Washington. So check your chosen tree before you start sawing it. Now we have a mystery sound. This is a very familiar winter bird, but you would be more likely to hear the sound in the spring and early summer. Our guest today, Laurel Ann Moulton, works for Washington State University in Clallam County. She serves as regional
horticultural specialist.
And I have to say that is a job that has no beginning and no end. Almost everything fits into it. I asked her to join us for the topic of spiders because both of us have spider interests. Hi, Laurel. Welcome.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
You're in a situation where people want to find out whether they should be scared about something. Is that really common in your job?
Yes, we get insects and arachnids submitted to the Master Gardener Plant Clinic. And I have to say that just about every time somebody brings in a spider is because they're worried about it. They think it's something that could hurt them or their family.
Thinking about what does live here in Western Washington and what are people most alarmed about? And they're bringing a spider in for ID. Do they scoop it into a jar, by the way? What do you usually see them in?
Yeah. Well, most often when people bring in spiders, they're squished. First of all, I don't recommend that. If you want to bring in a spider, I would recommend sweeping it into a jar. Spoiler alert, we don't have any poisonous spiders around here. So go ahead and handle them and just use a piece of paper to sweep them into a jar, and that's the best way to do it.
Okay. And the major message is we don't have a bunch of poisonous spiders around here. Are there any that can be tricky to identify or deal with? I know people talk about hobo spiders, partly because they are large-ish. Is there anything that you would say to be reassuring to people about the toxic spiders here?
First, I'll say we don't have brown recluse spiders around here. Those are limited to the southeastern United States. We don't have black widows here on the Olympic Peninsula. Those are the closest area where they should be found is eastern Washington. There's a small area in Seattle where they've been found. There's a possibility you could bring them in on firewood or in a moving truck, but for them to get established, you need to have at least a pair of them. And that's just, it hasn't happened except in a small area in Seattle where black widows can be found. So you had a question about hobo spiders.
Yes. What do they look like and how do people seem to have acquired a concern about them?
It's kind of an urban legend that hobo spiders cause bites that or give you bites that make your skin rot around the bite site.
Terrific.
But, yeah, I know. I would be worried about that too. But the truth is that the scientific evidence that we have is that hobo spiders do not cause bites that make your skin rot. There's three types of brown spiders that you might find in your house, related spiders, that people think are hobo spiders. There's a giant house spider, there is the domestic house spider, and there is the hobo spider. All spiders can bite, but those three, if they bite you, they're not going to make your skin rot.
You said that you had been bitten recently. What was that like? I mean, I've been bitten by spiders also, but I'm just curious about your experience.
Yeah, it's really nothing to worry about. What happened to me is I sat down on the couch. I felt something tickle my arm and I went to kind of brush it off. And that's when the spider bit me. Spiders are not known to be aggressive and they typically bite if they get caught between your clothing and your skin, or if you sit on them or something like that. So to me, it was just it was a little tingle. I guess I could say it hurt, but it wasn't just the itching of a mosquito bite, but it certainly didn't feel like I got stung by anything. It was just a very slight discomfort and there was just a red spot there.
Okay. What we're doing is starting with what people get scared about, and then we're working up to the benefits of spiders. And right. One of the things that we didn't talk about was that several children's books, like The Lord of the Rings, have really horrible villains that are spiders. And I think this is a bit unfair, but it's interesting that people's concern about spiders got wrapped up for the writers of those books when they were looking for making something that was really terrible and scary. And I wonder if it's the fact that they look so unlike us. They don't have any cute faces with little kitten eyes or anything like that. They are arachnids and they are what they are. They have eight legs and most people don't hang around long enough to count the legs. But I was wondering if we could think about the fact that to a large degree, spiders get some bad press.
Yeah, spiders do get bad press. Almost all spiders have venom, which is just something they use to stun their prey, which is usually insects or something small. But most spiders in the world are not poisonous.
Or they are poisonous only to what they're trying to find for food.
Right, right. The poison they have is just for stunning their prey, and their prey is small. Therefore, the poison doesn't have to be that strong. I think people are afraid of them, though, just because spiders, there's some that just hang out in the garden, like the orb weavers, and it might be surprising to run into one of those and get one in your face. But there's other spiders that they're hairy and they move quickly, and they appear to jump sometimes or quickly move towards you or out of the way. And so I think, they just move differently than we are, and they often live in kind of dark habitats.
Aha. And it's a good idea for people when moving wood or firewood or working outside to keep a little awareness and to wear gloves.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're moving firewood and you're concerned with spiders, particularly if you live in a region that's not ours that has poisonous spiders, you might want to wear long sleeves and gloves. And if you don't want to bring spiders in your house, you might inspect each piece of wood and maybe brush the spiders off.
Sometimes when firewood is needed, somebody's in a hurry.
I was just going to say, I like to make suggestions to make our chores even longer.
Given that there are that they choose often to live in protected places like cellars, there are some spiders that take up life inside houses.
Yeah, there's spiders that have evolved over the millennia to actually prefer living indoors. And I don't know enough to know whether those started with caves or what, but there's some spiders that live exclusively indoors because of the climate moderation that they find there. They also may have evolutionary modifications that allow them to survive in places that are a little bit drier or that have less prey availability. But there certainly are some that live exclusively indoors.
I have one that occupies my cellar.
Yeah. A common one is the genus is called Phocis, and yes. They're also known as cellar spiders because they're so common in cellars. And I think that one actually likes moist environments because I used to call those shower spiders because I had a couple that lived in my shower.
And they didn't get washed down the drain. They just kept living there around the edges.
Yeah. Some people sing in the shower and I talk to spiders.
Well, speaking of talking to spiders, one of the things that we wanted to mention was that the Burke Museum in Seattle has an absolutely wonderful spider expert whose name is Rod Crawford. He has written posts about spiders, which do a very, very good job of dispelling someone's fears and getting you interested in them. And Laurel, you said that you recently had a sample of a spider that you sent to Rod and talked to him about it.
Yeah, I oftentimes do the spider ID when they get submitted to our office. And, you know, there's kind of the usual characters that come in. But this one, it was just a picture of it, and it looked a little bit different than most I've seen. So I did my best to identify it. And then I emailed Rod Crawford and said, hey, can you weigh in on this? And it turned out that the spider was, it's called a folding door spider.
Folding, F-O-L-D-I-N-G?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of the, it's one of the few, spiders can be broken up into two broad categories. There's primitive spiders and there's more advanced spiders. That's not the right term, but that's what I'm going to say. And so this spider was, they're called megalomorphs, and they tend to be burrowing spiders because they're more primitive and they haven't evolved to survive drier locations. So they spend most of their time underground. And this spider...
They don't make a web then?
No, they don't make a web. They dig a burrow, which they line with silk. And then they make a trap door, which they can open and close to, you know, come out when they're disturbed. When something walks by that sounds tasty to them, they can pop up and grab it.
The wonders of nature never cease to amaze us. One of the things I'd like to jump into right now is the nature of spider webs, because they're quite fascinating. And let's take the beautiful orb spider webs that we see in the fall. In the fall, that spider has grown up enough to make a big, beautiful web. How do they do it? And we aren't going to start, but talk a little bit about that one, because that is what people think of when they think of spider web.
Yeah, all spiders have spinnerets on their hind end, and that's what they use to spin spider silk. The silk starts off as liquid inside of them, and when it's extruded, it goes through a complicated process and becomes silk. And each spider may be able to produce different types of silk. I've heard some spiders have four different kinds of silk. Other spiders have seven. It depends on the species and what they need it for.
And the orb web spider has both sticky and dry ones?
One species I read about, and I'm not sure if this is common across all orb weaving spiders, but they had four types of silk. One of them, you know, they can be for flexibility or strength or stickiness. They may form a drag line, which is something, it's a line that they use as kind of like a bungee cord or you know, to catch them if they fall or to help them travel up and down.
Wow. And those webs, many of them are water resistant, right?
Yeah, they're made of a protein that is quite strong and water resistant. So it's kind of fun to go outside and see the dew or rain hanging on webs. Or there's some webs like sheet web spiders, they create a web that's like a well, a sheet or a handkerchief that might catch a little pool of water in it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen, and it's very surprising because you think, well, gosh, why doesn't this thing just collapse? And they have tremendous tensile strength. There are a number of people studying spider webs to try to figure out how to adapt their characteristics. Do you want to add anything about that?
You know, it's one of those billion-dollar questions, I guess, because spider silk is so strong in multiple different ways that if we could figure out how to make it, it might just be the ultimate building material for all sorts of purposes. But so far in the lab, even though this has been studied for years, nobody has been able to produce spider silk just like spiders do.
I read that during World War II, spider silk was used to make sights for guns. When they needed to be able to sight something, they would put a spider web in it in a crossway. I have no idea how they did that or whatever, but that they actually have been used in tools, and they're used by other animals like the hummingbird has spider webs in the nest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. You know, I think most people think of spider webs as a nuisance or mm-hmm. some people, you know, think they're beautiful, but they're this integral part of nature. You know, hummingbirds use them to keep their nest together so it doesn't fall apart. And, you know, where would we be without hummingbirds?
Well, and I have been trying to visualize the hummingbird finding the spider web, carrying it to where it's building a nest and putting it in the right place. That is just astonishing. So, and some spiders will recycle their webs by eating them so they get the protein.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a very valuable resource. And so by consuming their own silk, they can reuse it. There's also instances of, you know, when male spiders join a female on the web, sometimes they'll do a little remodeling on the web too. So sometimes more than one spider contributes to a web.
Well, this is in the line of, let's all look very carefully. I know if you're hiking or walking and you come across one of those drag lines that is a single strand that gets across your face, you're very much aware of the sticky uncomfortableness of it. But most of the time, we can just watch. And let's talk finally about the benefits of spiders. I have seen catalogs that are offering gadgets to get rid of spiders, like little vacuums just for spiders. And I would like to get a list here a little bit of the benefits of spiders, which are many.
Yeah, I can't tell you how beneficial spiders are. It's just the list is amazing. But I'll start with I found a kind of a shocking number, which was that there recently some researchers determined that worldwide spiders consume 440 to 880 million tons of insects every year.
Tons?
Woo! Yeah, that's worldwide.
Wow.
But if you know, people who are bothered by spiders are often bothered by other arthropods, insects or otherwise. And just think, if you didn't have spiders, you'd have more insects to deal with. So, and they help with pest control as well. You know, you'll find spiders in your garden, and they eat insects that you might consider pests. I guess there's some that also eat pollinators, but that's just part of life. It's not unnatural. I think that's one thing that we should all remember with insects and arachnids and other arthropods. They aren't here to cause trouble for us. They're here to fit a niche in nature. And they even if we don't know what their job is, there's something important they're doing.
The important thing is that they know what their job is. So, Laurel, I have really enjoyed sharing the very little bit that we were able to do about spiders. We may do this again. I can see people reaching to turn off their radios, but really, these are wonderful animals. And you have shared, I think, the pleasure of discovery, of learning a creature or learning about a type of creature and following it around and discovering. So Thank you so much, Laurel. I have really enjoyed this.
Thanks, Mary. I really enjoyed it too. And I would love to take any opportunity to encourage folks to explore and learn more about the little critters that are around.
Okay. Thank you. It's been great being with you. Our mystery sound. This is, as you know, a bird, a very small, tidy bird, the red-breasted nuthatch. It actually has a breast that's kind of a gentle orange, and it looks as if it were simply designed for us to watch and be delighted. If you've ever noticed when you're taking a hike, you walk one way and you see a bunch of things, and when you're coming back the other way, you see differences. Well, the nuthatch can move up, down, and around on tree bark or on a seed feeder. And to them, upside down is just as likely as right side up. And I think it probably helps them not miss something. Their sharp eyes are on the lookout for any sign of insect life. Most of their foraging is done on live conifers, more on the inner branches than the outer, but they can even look for things around the bases of needle clusters. They eat beetles, and ants are also commonly taken, and nuthatches will cache food, especially in the autumn, to recover it during winter. And they will cover a cached object with fragments of the substrate, presumably to hide them from competitors. Hairy woodpeckers have been seen watching nuthatches to take their caches. That is a reminder of how much amazing animals learn by observation. Thanks for joining us at Nature Now for Thanksgiving week. Lots of appreciation to Nora Petrich for another successful distanced program. If you want to follow podcasts of Nature Now, go to the KPTZ website and move yourself to podcasts, slide down to Nature Now. And these podcasts are available over a period of years, so there's a lot to explore. Our music today that ends the show is The Long and Winding Road by the Beatles, because for so many of us, the people we want to see are down a long and winding road. Thank you so much for joining us today. Bye.
The long and winding road that leads to your door will never disappear. I've seen that road before. Lead me to your door. The wild and windy night that the rain washed away has left a pool of tears crying I've cried. Anyway, you'll never know. long, long time ago. To